I'm not as energetic as our first speaker here, but I want to make sure everybody's awake. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Amel, and I have the honor of presenting to you today. And I'm going to talk to you about my experience with a community-based participatory research project that we conducted in Southeast Michigan. And I served as the project manager of that project, and I hope that you will benefit from the presentation today. No disclosures to make at all. Mainly, I would like to describe the project in general, what our goal was for the CBPR project, as well as describe to you the partnership process and some of the lessons that we learned from our experience. So just some background information. So who is this population that I'm talking about? Well, American Muslims constitute 7 to 8 million people in the United States, and they're a very demographically diverse community. So about a quarter are indigenous African Americans, another quarter are South Asian Americans, and another quarter are Arab Americans. And oftentimes people perceive or make the mistake of assuming that if someone identifies as Arab that they are Muslim, or if someone identifies as Muslim that they are Arab. And actually the majority of Arab Americans tend to be Christian. So the community is very diverse. Each group within the larger community has varied immigration histories. So although 65% of American Muslims are foreign-born, 35% are actually native, and there is some research that tells us that 1 in 5 slaves were Muslim when they first came to the United States. As for the Arab and South Asians who immigrated to this country, they primarily came in the 19th and 20th century, usually for skilled labor. Some people came for healthcare and other fields. We conducted our project in Metro Detroit in southeastern Michigan, and we did that because it's home to one of the oldest and largest population of American Muslims, and has also the largest concentration of Arab Americans. Some of you may have heard of Dearborn and the recent TLC, I think a reality show that's coming out highlighting some American Muslim families there. That's a very specific demographic within the larger American Muslim population. So this population in Southeast Michigan is actually very well established, with more than 40 mosques, institutions, and community centers, and it's a very diverse community. And we set out to really look at religion as a factor in the health of the community. Oftentimes, I mean, we know that religious beliefs and the cultural values of people will influence how they perceive illness, how they perceive disease, how they seek health care, and ultimately will influence the health of the community. But what we found is that religion is often left out of the equation. So people will generally look at ethnicity, at race, at socioeconomic status, but really leave the faith component out, which is very important for many individuals. And also that because there's little research on American Muslims in the health literature, so we set out to conduct our project for these reasons. Why CBPR? Because we really value the collaborative approach. CBPR empowers the community, gives community members a voice, helps them feel like they are part of the decision-making process, gives them a seat at the table. And we really wanted to move from research on a community and in a community to research with a community, seeing the community members as valuable partners in the process. And we also know that CBPR has been successful with refugee and underrepresented communities, and it also allowed us to get at the various demographics within the larger American Muslim population. So what did we do? We had to establish partnerships. So I came on to the project after some of the partnerships were already established. So, and I do want to give a shout out to my PI, Dr. Asim Padilla, who basically immersed himself in the community to start establishing these partnerships. He visited mosques, he attended cultural events, met with key leaders through professional networks, and by doing that, he was able to form a steering committee that was comprised of different community leaders within the American Muslim community from different mosques, as well as experienced researchers and myself, who as an active social worker in the community. And our collaborative team consisted of two larger umbrella Islamic organizations, so these two right here, who basically represented more than 35 mosques and other institutions within the Southeastern Michigan Muslim community, as well as an Arab Health organization, service organization, ACCESS, some of you may be familiar with that organization, and a research policy institute titled the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding, which is really focuses on American Muslim issues and issues around the Muslim world. They provided some funding, but primarily the funding was through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation through their Clinical Scholars Program. So what did we set out to explore? Well, we basically wanted to know what were the health beliefs. What did American Muslims, what were some of the beliefs that American Muslims have about health and about illness, and how do those beliefs impact how they seek health care, what types of health care they seek, and when they are in this system, when they are in the healthcare system, what are some of the challenges they face in seeking health care? Well, that's not the focus of the presentation, but I just wanted to give you some background information about what we set out to do. We did publish some papers, also a policy report through ISP, one of our partner organizations, that described some suggestions, some recommendations for meeting the healthcare needs. And we also conducted a community forum where we met with the community and shared our results with them and had a discussion about some of our findings. But what I really want to talk about is our process. So our research was comprised of two phases. Phase one included semi-structured interviews with community leaders that served, those discussions served as the guide for developing the interview guide with the focus groups. So we conducted 13 focus groups at 7 area mosques, and we ensured that the focus groups were gender concordant and language concordant, and just out of respect for the cultural values of that community. I facilitated the female focus groups, and my colleague facilitated the male focus groups, and we actually also conducted some focus groups in Arabic and translated the interview guide in Arabic as well as the flyers. Ultimately, we ended up with 102 participants, which we were very proud of. But to do that, we had to engage the mosques, and to do so, we connected with some of our community partners and went to their meetings and engaged with the local community leaders there, engaged with the imams or religious leaders at the various mosques, and then followed up with people who displayed interest. And we actually ended up meeting with people in person at each local mosque that expressed interest. So we all got into a car and took a road trip around Southeastern Michigan and visited every mosque that we were going to be working with, just to establish trust and have that personal connection and make people feel comfortable about being involved in the process with us. It was challenging, and it was challenging because mosques are not necessarily organized in the same way as other institutions. There's a lack of standardization. There is a high turnover rate. Usually the leadership will change. And not only that, people are doing this kind of as an ad hoc basis. And so they don't always have the time commitment to be with you throughout the whole process. There's also an unfamiliarity with and mistrust of the research, especially post 9/11. So a lot of communities are mistrusting of researchers coming into the community and asking all sorts of questions. And finally, there's also a lack of understanding of and the benefits and the implications that the research will have for the community. We recruited participants utilizing a variety of recruitment strategies, primarily through community leaders and partners. So people that knew other people that knew other people, word of mouth, also emails, flyers, website postings. Some of the mosques agreed to post information about our project, and announcements during prayer services as well as other events. And also we had the research assistants actually go into the mosque and talk with people and encourage them to be part of the project. We ended up with 392 people who demonstrated some type of interest, who signed up and said they were interested, which is a pretty significant number. But it was also challenging, before we could, obviously we were not going to use all 392 individuals, we had to confirm a certain number of individuals. So they went through a screening process. We had our research assistants call and screen, and so we obviously people who were ineligible were removed from the sample. But then we had to confirm people. And it was challenging to confirm people because a lot of people just were no longer interested. They might have gotten excited the day somebody was generating a sign-up list and they were signing up for the project. Or they were just unavailable, they were hard to reach, their contact information no longer worked, or they just didn't want to respond to us. But ultimately, we ended up with 102 total people who participated. And even after confirmations, some people still didn't show. So we ended up canceling 3 focus groups for some of the same reasons. And we found that recruitment strategies that were most, you know, some of the most effective recruitment strategies were the ones that, you know, utilize personal contact, which is kind of, you know, common sense. If you know somebody, you're more likely to, you know, to trust the person that is talking to you and to be and want to be part of the project. Also, what was interesting, we found that announcements and website postings were some of the more successful strategies. So our flyers or emails or phone calls weren't nearly as successful as them hearing a religious leader stand up after a prayer service and make an announcement about the project, as well as see that the mosque actually supported the project and had it listed on their website. So that was some information for even myself as an insider to the community to kind of take back and think about how to work differently with my own community. So the partnership process. Everybody comes to the table with their own agenda, right? Our community partners, as I mentioned earlier, were 4, with 1 to 2 representatives each that formed part of a steering committee. We held regular in-person and teleconference meetings, and it was a really long process, an 18-month extensive process. There was mutual agreement that the community partners and the representatives would be involved in all phases of the project, from research guide development, to recruitment, to analysis, to paper writing, to dissemination. However, in reality, that partner involvement varied, as I'm sure many of you are well aware. It changes. So some of the challenges we had in with the partnership process was the changing leadership. I mean, many representatives from these organizations are juggling multiple responsibilities, and they are volunteering in these organizations, and they might leave to another organization or get a new job or whatever it might be. And so if you're connecting with one person from an organization and then they leave, it's difficult sometimes to get another person from that organization to fully support what you're doing. Differing expectations. We had one representative who was very minimally involved until the paper writing happened. And, you know, there were some ethical issues that we had to kind of deal with at that point. And eventually that representative withdrew from the project. Some people just have limited time. Their time doesn't allow them to be extensively involved. And so we've had some representatives who would tell us, I'd be happy to forward emails, I'd be happy to connect with people, but I can't really attend your meetings. I can't really be involved in the analysis process. Other challenges, lack of clarity in roles. Sometimes in these smaller organizations, it's not really clear who's responsible for what, and sometimes there's a diffusion of responsibility. And sometimes deliverables change. You know, you may have decided to, one organization might have decided to work on a specific product after the project, and they changed their mind. And so sometimes those things are beyond our control. Also, scheduling conflicts and limited understanding of CBPR. I mean, I think this point is so important because so many people still have trouble understanding exactly what CBPR principles are composed of, and they feel sometimes that as academics or as researchers, they see us as the authority and don't feel like they necessarily have much to offer. And so we had to constantly reiterate to our partners and to our representatives and even our community members that you have something very valuable to offer, and we're not just coming in to do this research and leave. We actually want you to be part of this process. We want you to be involved in our analysis. We want you to be involved in our paper writing. We want you to be involved in all phases of the project. So constantly having to remind people, I think, was one issue that involved a major paradigm shift for people that were involved in the project. As well, as I mentioned earlier, limited understanding of just research in general and how important this type of research is for the health of the community. So what are some of our recommendations? Some of them you can take back to your own communities. They're not limited to just the American Muslim population. But it's very important to establish trust, building that personal connection, finding someone within the community that you feel comfortable working with and they feel comfortable with you, and also finding someone that maybe knows somebody and can connect you with multiple people, generating buy-in from the various stakeholders in the community. It's really important to be able to identify who are these organizations that community members see as credible and are well established in the community, and investing time for relationship building and collaboration. For the partnership process, establishing a schedule for the team as well as a timeline for people to understand where we're going with this process because it can very much seem like an endless process. And outlining expectations, time commitments. Okay, you can only be part of these discussions. What other resources can you provide? We had one representative who was unable to spend much time, but they were more than happy to provide health education materials for our focus group participants. And engage in constant dialogue. Check in. How is it going? Is this working for you? What's not working for you? Finally, for research methods, it's also important to modify the research methods for the population that you're working with. Be culturally sensitive. We found that focus groups were a very good fit for the communal culture of this population. We also had to be sensitive to cultural values around modesty and gender interaction, and so this is why we conducted male focus groups separately and female focus groups separately. Also, in scheduling our focus groups, making sure that they don't impose on people's prayer times. If they're going to get up and say, I have to go pray, that's disruptive to the focus group. So making people feel as comfortable as possible, and also using simple and appropriate language. People don't always understand research terminology, so really explaining simply what is it that you are trying to work on, what is the goal of this project in very simple terms, and also translating as needed. So we had a focus group that was conducted totally in the Arabic language. We had to make sure that our interview guide worked, our flyers worked, and connecting with people to make sure that it was actually working for that population. Also important to utilize multiple recruitment methods. Personal connections work best. And respecting the mosque structure. So some, like other institutions, feel very strongly about having someone come in and set up a table and recruit people versus them telling us, I'd be happy to post your information on our website, or I'd be happy to send an email myself. So just kind of being cognizant of that piece as well. Remember to keep an open mind and embrace cultural humility. And, this goes for all of us. There are things that we thought potentially would work, and they didn't work. We thought certain mosques were going to be involved, and they didn't involve. And even as an insider within the community, realizing that there's so much to learn for myself as well. And to be patient. It's a very long, long process. CBPR is not an easy process. And, we were excited to actually be able to do one of the first CBPR projects with this community, but we also realized at the end that as much as we try to follow the principles of CBPR, the reality is that we could not, given the community that we were working with, given our project, and just given kind of the other factors as well. But it's the intention that counts, and we tried. And I hope that this was beneficial to the group here. Please feel free to ask any questions afterwards. I do want to acknowledge our team at the University of Michigan, as well as our community team members, and frankly, to all the participants who were involved in the project. And without their involvement, we would not be here today. Thank you.